intense, thrilling, electrifying sport on the planet. Mixed Martial Arts. You've been looking for the definitive podcast to call your new home to hear everything about it. The search is over. This is the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. Bringing you the hottest MMA breakdowns straight from the heart of the octagon. This show is all about MMA breakdowns. For fans, by fans. We're talking UFC, MMA, and the occasional big boxing match. We'll bring our unique take on how these fights are going to play out and who we think are the best bets. Welcome to the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. And now your hosts, Olin, a.k.a. MMA Anomaly, and Emiliano, a.k.a. Jive Turkey Nano.
What is up, fight fans? Welcome back to another episode of the MMA Anomaly Show, No Filter. You heard the man. I'm your host, Olin, a.k.a. MMA Anomaly. And with me, as always, is the co-host with the most, Jive Turkey Nano. How we doing, brother?
Doing great, man. Good to see you. Good to be back. Took a little hiatus here, but, you know, we're back like we never left. We got a lot of things to kick off, man. A lot of exciting news and some great fights, man. A little bit of a sleeper card, some will say, but... Brother, I'm excited to dive on in with you.
Absolutely. 100% the same. And yeah, I mean, we definitely have a little bit of a sleeper card to go over here in this one. I mean, yeah, I personally feel like this one is, I mean, come on. There were definitely really, really good fights. The elephant in the room that we have to address, obviously, is the main event. I mean, Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Shamil Gaziev. Anytime there's a 25-minute heavyweight fight, there's a 50-50 chance that it's going to be really, really boring or that it's going to end in the first round. And unfortunately, we got the latter. So very excited to jump right on into this one. And then obviously later on in the week, we are going to be going over UFC 299, which I am stoked about. Of course, man. It's a Dustin Poirier fight week. Obviously, it's a Chito Vera fight week. So... you already know we are going to be split down the middle here when it comes to that main event, but I digress. We're here to talk about UFC Vegas 87. So we will go ahead and jump right on into the opener here. Man, we had Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi coming in against Loic Razibov. I mean, solid fight, honestly. Decent amount of volume, not the most exciting fight in the world up until the finish there, but at least we did get a finish. We got a finish 49 seconds into the very last round here from Loic Radzibov. Curious to hear what stood out to you, if anything, regarding both these guys' performances.
Yeah, it was a good back and forth performance, like you said, to start off the night here. Fight night in the Apex Center. So we have the smaller octagon. Important factor to keep in mind here, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking a significant difference, at least a foot, I believe, on the outsides, and maybe even another foot or two across as well. So you're going to feel a little bit tighter in there, especially for those heavyweights, which we'll get into later. But yeah, to kick off the night, one of my big takeaways of this initial fight was one, they both kept getting called for fence grabbing. So initial one was a little sloppy, even though in terms of technicality, striking wise, it wasn't necessarily a sloppy match, but was kind of funny watching it and watching them get scolded by the referee. Both of them at the same time. No more grabbing on the fence. You two, like, kids, stay off the playground, like, kind of sentiment. So that was funny to see. But no, man, my other takeaway was our boy, Loic, Radzibov, boy, he has a big back and he's got a mean game to him. Looked very strong, looked to just simply weather out his opponent, the American Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi. Hell of a name. Abdul, I mean, two hyphens in there. You got to appreciate that. But yeah, again, I think it was a masterclass. Thank you, brother. Right on cue. As always, producing as well here, the MMA Anomaly. You don't see that anywhere else here, ladies and gentlemen. It's just us two and my man producing over there. So appreciate you. But yeah, again, it was a fun fight. A kind of maybe a little lackluster until that finish, which was exciting. In the third round, you hardly ever see that. But Loic's no joke, brother. Again, that back, he looks strong. That was my big takeaway here from that matchup. And excited to see what's next for him, right? We're talking about a lightweight division. It's completely stacked. Hard to play matchmaker when they're new in the UFC, when there's so many fun matchups to make. But I certainly can't wait to see him get back in there sooner than later.
I won't dwell on this one too much more than that. I completely agree with you there. I think he looked really strong out there. The decision-making was truly on point for him. There was a little bit of, you know, kind of cheating going on, for lack of better words. A lot of fence grabbing and things like that. But, you know, these guys are new, right? So slightly to be expected. But again, not going to play matchmaker for Loic. A little bit early in his career for us to be doing that. And he's quite far down a list of very, very stacked lightweights in the UFC killers row. So moving into the next one, we had Ludovit Klein coming in against AJ Cunningham. Man, oh man. I wanted to see AJ Cunningham do well because the guy has just a crazy, crazy story. I don't know if you're familiar with it at all, but unless I'm mistaken and there's another guy whose last name is Cunningham, basically the dude has like a Hollywood-like background story. And that, I don't mean that in a good way at all. His parents would like put him in a cage. They wouldn't feed him for days at a time. They would throw spoiled food on him and like let him sit in his filth. Like they basically tortured this kid. So he's come from a tough, tough background and fought his way through adversity. And obviously you want to see a guy like that do well. He's 11-4 now. So it's tough, right? But I'm very confident that the savage AJ Cunningham will bounce back. In this one, he did not get it done. He got outlanded at almost a 2-1 clip from Ludovit Klein, who landed 63 out of 95 strikes at a 66.3% clip. Just chef's kiss when it comes to the accuracy there. Meanwhile, AJ Cunningham, the savage, landed 36 of 77, landing at a 46.8% clip. All 36 strikes that he landed were significant. 60 of the 63 his opponent landed were also significant, however. I think the takedowns were a big differentiator as well. AJ Cunningham did not shoot one single time in the match, while his opponent shot three times and landed 2 of 3. Again, just like we said in the last matchup, Ludovit looked very, very strong here against AJ Cunningham. And again, in the lightweight division, I actually wouldn't be mad at seeing Ludovit Klein versus Loic Radziwanov in their next matches. Curious to hear your thoughts on this matchup.
I love that. I love that. Building a little narrative, a little steam behind it. You know, two people that were on the same card might have a little bit of interactions building up to the fight. Wouldn't be bad at that at all. But yeah, this was another one, like you said, leaning off with the word strong. I mean, again, Ludovit Klein, a.k.a. Mr. Highlight. Excuse me. Frog stuck in my throat here. Man, did he put out a highlight. Again, really, really strong performance all throughout that first round for as long as it lasted. Him and AJ both look good. I do want to give AJ his flowers as well. You got to love a good story. But man, were they moving? They're dodging. You saw some really good offensive striking, but you also saw some really good defense. Unfortunately, what you did see was Mr. Highlight himself just start to really beat and batter his opponent in AJ Cunningham, use that experience that he has under his belt. He has over 10 more wins and fights under his belt, Mr. Highlight, Ludovit Klein, I'm talking about here, over AJ. And you saw that, right? I mean, they are the same age. And sometimes that extra time in the octagon, the extra time seeing different scenarios. And again, when you just look at these two fighters and maybe a little bit of that extra, just that dog that you had Mr. Highlight add in him. I think that's really where it boiled down, right? I mean, they both are talented. Both showed the ability to strike offensively, but also be defensive with their movement, be in and out of the pocket, be good with their distance management, their octagon management. Really clean fight, but again, Ludovit Klein, man, is no joke. Fight out of Slovakia, someone we need to keep our mind, keep fresh in our minds, and hopefully we do see him back in there again soon. He's young, he's in his prime and only getting better. So with 21 wins on his belt, love to see him try to get a crack at somebody in that top 25 or continue to climb those rankings.
Absolutely. I think the future is very, very bright for one Ludovit Klein. That is a fact. And again, I think that Ludovit Klein versus Loic Radziwanov is a very, very fun matchup for both of these gentlemen. Gun to my head, I would probably take Ludovic Klein in that one, but we'll see. Moving into the next one, we had Christian Leroy Duncan coming in against Claudio Ribeiro. I mean, this was kind of a pick'em in my opinion. I didn't really think that it was going to be one-way traffic, so to say. But boy, oh boy, am I glad I didn't break it down prior, because I would have been very wrong. It was pretty one-way traffic here, folks. 75 strikes compared to 13, and a 71.4% accuracy clip to 33.3. So, I mean, one guy landed about three quarters of his strikes. The other guy landed about a third of his. And also, you know, one guy also threw about a third as many strikes. So it looked on TV about like what I'm describing to you on paper or statistically, pretty one-sided. Christian Leroy Duncan went out there and honestly looked really strong and really long. I don't even know like what the official reach difference was in that fight. I got to look it up real quick. But let me tell you, it looked like Leroy was like a whole man longer, because geez Louise, man, like just the way that he used his range in the fight, I felt like he just dictated the pace everywhere the fight went. Nano, were you impressed specifically by anything that Christian Leroy Duncan did, or did anything surprise you that he did?
Yeah, man, I think it mentioned a good thing there in the sense of his ability to lead, his ability to use his range and use that good athleticism that we've grown to know about Christian Leroy Duncan. And again, it just felt like he had that edge. It just was, he was a little step ahead. He was a little bit more aggressive, the one landing his strikes a little bit before his opponent. And then he just really started to pour it on him, right? It went from a light drizzle to a complete thunderstorm for our boy Claudio Ribeiro, who again at first looked to be a tough fighter, but man, with somebody like Christian Leroy Duncan that's landing these spinning kicks on you, that is feinting, that looked like a really big middleweight out there, might as well have been a light heavyweight for just how big he looked in that smaller octagon. But yeah, was able to use his striking really well, landed over 75% of his punches. Excuse me. And again, the takedown, controlling on top, and then being able to do the ground and pound and just finish him out the way he did was really impressive. I mean, it was a good, well-rounded mixed martial arts performance by our boy Christian Leroy Duncan, the man with three first names, which you love to see. And yeah, I mean, in a 10-1 record. Fine out of England, another top prospect here, 28 years young. Man, excited to see what's next for him here. You know, I mean, great record. Jeez, keep getting stuck here, coming off a cold. Be curious to know if you have any names top of your mind. Man, not good at playing matchmaker today because, again, it's tough. There's a lot of tough fighters in the UFC right now. And when they're not ranked, it's an unclear path. There's so many potential matchups you can do. But would you want to see maybe Christian Leroy Duncan get a crack at the top 15? Or do you think he's maybe a fight or two away?
Now, that is a really good question. In the middleweight division, I think it can be kind of up in the air, right? But I still think, even with that being said, that he's still about a fight away at least. Maybe two fights away, depending on how he gets it done. But he did get it done very impressively in this fight. The issue is it was over an 11-5 Claudio Ribeiro. He's not necessarily a household name. So getting it done like that, that impressively, as impressive as it was over Claudio Ribeiro, it doesn't warrant a top 15 fight, in my opinion. Middleweight MMA rankings. Let's see who is right outside of the top 15. I don't want to say it out loud.
It's probably a good place to look, but
yeah, I don't even want to say it out loud. I mean, there's a couple of options here. I think one of the options that I'm thinking of here fights on UFC 299. I could be mistaken though. Yeah, no, he is. He's on the early prelims. Okay, I gotta fight for him.
I'm listening.
So he fights the loser of Michel Pereira versus Mikhail Oleksaychik.
I like
loser
it.
Of that fight.
Yeah.
Fights Christian Leroy Duncan.
There we go. You have it.
Because I
I'll
think
be honest
that trajectory
now.
That trajectory lines up as far as like when they'll be healthy enough to fight again. And both of those guys are like right on the teeter, like maybe 15 to 20. So I think that that makes sense for him. The winner of that deserves a top 15 fight.
I like that.
And likely the winner of that will be Mikhail Oleksychuk, but we'll get into that in 2 days whenever we have that episode.
Mikhail versus Mikhail. I like
you
it.
You know what I'm saying? My fitness consigliere, Mikhail.
Mikhail.
One of the best movies of all time.
Of all time.
Speaking of best movies of all time, one of the best fights of the card was this next fight here. Man, these guys threw almost 400 strikes between the two of them. Ooh-wee. You know I'm talking about Javid Bashrat coming in against Ayman Zahabi, the battle of the brothers. You know, I always say that I think the matchmakers sometimes just like have a good time with this. Like, I genuinely think that like, they're like, okay, you know, we've done the, you know, number 10 versus number 9, or, you know, the numbers matchups that make sense. Now let's do a matchup that's maybe just fun because both guys have funny nicknames and the loser has to change their nickname, right? Or they have the same nickname or they have the same first name, Battle of the Brandons. Brandon Royval versus Brandon Moreno. Like, we've seen things like that so often. And in this one, it's literally the battle of the brothers, okay? Because Ayman Zahabi is Firas Zahabi's little brother. That's right. God bless you. God bless you, my co-host. So Firas Zahabi, you might recognize the name as the guy that trained GSP, right? So that guy's little brother is now a UFC fighter. That's Ayman Zahabi. Across from him is Javid Bashrat, whose brother is Fareed Bashrat. You might recognize because they're both UFC fighters. This fight was very, very close. I mean, realistically, you know what? I've taken the lead on all these. I'm going to let you take the lead on this one because I'm curious to hear two things. One, just overall what your thoughts were on the fight. And two, do you think the judges got it right? Very close matchup.
It was a really close matchup, and that was what I was going to lead with, was boy, was it fun to watch, and boy, would it have been hard to score. I am glad I am not a judge. I am glad I am just, you know, on the No Filter show, and we can just be very candid and upfront, and that, man, it was hard to score. Very fun to watch. Let me start there. Very fun to watch. What you did see is, like you said, two brothers, two families that have fighting in their DNA. It's in their blood. They got violence running through their veins, y'all. And that's exactly what we saw. Man, Bashrat, my brother there on that side, started off guns blazing. He looked really good. Seemed to be moving really well. Was able to land some of his strikes, some of his combinations. But as the fight went on, man, and again, I think that's where that GSP coaching, his brother, having that experience, and knowing how to make those subtle in-fight adjustments. That was, I think, the big key here for our boy, Mr. Zahabi, to go out there and get it done. Fighting is not just a hobby for him, all right? It is a profession. And he went out there and he made Javid start to move backwards, and he actually started to hurt him there. He dropped him a couple times with a leg kick, I believe, in that second or third round. And so as a fighter, as a watcher enjoying the fight, my initial thought was, man, I think Bashrat won that first round. I was rooting for him, but I was not surprised by the decision. And I do think that was probably the right one, especially when you actually started to break down the strike differential, especially when you just, again, use your eyeballs and maybe do give Bashrat that first round. But the second and third, it felt like Zahabi was running away with it. And again, some of those significant strikes are what stood out to me, which I'm sure stood out to the judges as well. Although Javid Bashrat did not appreciate or did he agree with the decision of the judges. But curious to hear your thoughts, brother. I appreciate you letting me lead on that one. But anything else that stood out to you in terms of the striking, in terms of maybe the game plan, or just overall this back and forth fight, man? It was a close one. Did you agree with the judges, or what were your thoughts?
So I'm going to start off by saying great breakdown. I agree with most of what you said. So on live watch and on rewatch, I gave rounds 1 and 2 to Javid Bashrat. I know the leg kicks were starting to add up in the second. The third round is when he really, really started to like put a walloping on him with those leg kicks. And you could tell he was having trouble even standing, right? But in total strikes and in significant strikes, Javid outlanded him in the first two rounds. So I thought he won those. But I could see how you could give round 2 to either guy. So not going to call out for robbery or anything like that. Biggest things that stood out to me were one corner's adaptability or ability to just completely change a game plan or fight game plan versus the other having just zero ability to do that. Javid came in with a game plan and he stuck with that game plan to a detriment while his opponent came in with a game plan and then realized, oh, well, in the first round, I was throwing these 5 different weapons and one of 5 is really looking like it's actually doing anything. Maybe I should just really lean into the 1. And then he started to lean into the 1 across the next 2 rounds. And boy, oh boy, does that tend to work sometimes. So good on him. Good on Zahabi for doing that. I thought Ayman looked really good. His ability, like I said, to adapt and change the game plan on the fly to an extent. And I mean, obviously you got to give it up to the fighter for having the ability to follow that coach telling him what to do and kind of yelling instruction, especially on the fly. But you also really have to give it up for the fact that he does have a really good corner, one of the best in the biz. And, it's not going to get any better than having your brother in your corner, especially when your brother is one of the best at what he does. So good on him. The future is extremely bright for this bantamweight. I think it is definitely time for him to get up in there as far as UFC rankings. Do you have any names on the tip of your tongue for this young man?
Oh, man. You think he's ready, huh? It's a stacked division there at bantamweight. A lot of buzz going on right now. I don't have anyone on the top of my mind, but now that you mention it, man, I'm going to pull up the rankings and see if there is some potential stars that can align. Do you have anyone that's top of mind on your end, brother? Lay it on me.
Unfortunately, I do. I do have somebody that's top of mind. I actually have 2 names, whichever one says yes to him, essentially. So you got Ricky Simone, who's coming off of a loss to Mario Bautista, right? And then you got Mario Bautista, who's coming off of a win over Ricky Simone. So I think he stacks up pretty well against either one of those guys. One of them is sitting at 15 and the other one is sitting at 14.
I like that, brother. I like that. Yeah, I mean, hey, why not? You're not getting any younger. Ayman Zahabi is at 36 years old. Now is the time to strike. Ricky Simon at 31 years old. And like you said, coming off a loss, maybe that's where you make him kind of earn those stripes back a little bit. Maybe he's not heading towards the top like a Mr. Mario Bautista would be as his next opponent. So maybe you throw Mr. Zahabi a bone here and see if Ricky Simon will answer that call. Sure, he will. But that would be a fun fight for sure. Would love to see how Ayman and the crew apply their game plan and their coaching and their tactics when it comes to the octagon approach and game plan. But it's a fun one, man. That's a good call. I like it. You're hot today. Got a hot bat.
I'm ready, man. I'm ready. I had a week off, feeling refreshed, rejuvenated, and ready to roll, baby. Also super fucking stoked for Thursday's episode where we break down UFC 299. It is a Dustin Poirier fight week, as you folks know. And that's my favorite fighter. Come on. Like, the Cajun, the raging Cajun, you're going to get it done on Saturday. Let's go. So, moving into the next fight, speaking of somebody who was raging, somebody who's looking to get it done, his name is just a couple letters away from his game, and his game is very vicious. You know I'm talking about Vinicius Oliveira coming in against Bernardo Sopai. I really thought Sopai was going to get this done, he outlanded him in total strikes, landed 94 to his opponent, Vinicius Oliveira's 88. But, man, one of the nastiest knockouts I've seen of the year thus far. Just a beautiful setup. Was abusing the legs, just hurting the legs over and over again. Made him back up and just sprinted towards him like Happy Gilmore sprinting towards a goddamn golf ball and launched himself into a flying knee faster than Happy Gilmore's golf balls get launched. It was wild. The way that that young man's body folded, it's like something out of a movie. It was wild. Again, like just, yeah, it was movie scene stuff, man. I watched the replay multiple times, covering my eyes like a little kid looking through my finger cracks. Just picture perfect. You literally can't script a knockout that looks that good. And I say that because we're all going to watch the really bad fucking Roadhouse remake in just a few weeks. And it's not going to be good fight scenes.
But hopefully
these guys go out there and they get stuff that you couldn't choreograph if you tried to.
Yeah, that was right on the money, wasn't it? That was fantastic. ESPN top 10, man. Just a sheer case of athleticism and accuracy. Like you said, just a sniper out there. Although he wasn't throughout the fight. I mean, he threw a ton of punches, 170 and only landed 88. That and Vinicius Oliveira. But yeah, man, is he extremely talented? But hey, a win's a win, right? And I think that was the big takeaway is, like you mentioned in the beginning there, our man Bernardo. Sopaj, what happened, brother? The tires fell off, man. He started off really good. He was landing strikes. Yeah, landed some takedowns. But he got gassed out, didn't he? Got gassed out down there, didn't you? Just did not prepare for it. I don't know if there's some elevation in Vegas he wasn't ready for. I don't know, man. But unfortunately, that was the reality. Was you really saw him fade and fade and fade. And like a lion in the jungle, like a gray white in the waters. You know, when you see a wounded animal, that is an easy meal. And that is a one-way ticket to my belly. So he found the finish, man. And talk about a buzzer beater, right? I mean, if that's not as close as you can get. We've seen closer. Shout out Yadier Rodriguez. But you want to talk about a buzzer beater. 20 seconds left. He gets that walk-off flying knee here. Vinicius didn't want to leave it to the judges. Said, you know what? Forget about it. I'll go and take care of this guy. But he was looking forward to that whole fight. I think that is my one takeaway with him as well. Another extremely talented, extremely athletic fighter coming out of Brazil. Don't have a name necessarily, but would love to see him just get back in there as soon as possible. Maybe another international card. Maybe if we go back to Brazil at some point. But he was a dog. Love to see him back. A little unorthodox. I don't want to say sloppy just because, you know, he's just not technically sound. But he's an accurate striker and, man, he obviously has that knockout power. So shout out and way to go for having one of the biggest knockouts of the night, for sure.
Honestly, playing easy matchmaker, we could do Javid Basharat versus Bernardo Sopai and Vinicius Oliveira versus Ayman Zahabi.
There you go. Wouldn't mind it.
And then Ayman Zahabi versus Vinicius Oliveira is a top 15 contender fight. Winner gets a top 15 crack. I mean, I think that's easy money.
It's solid. You know, obviously injuries, all those kind of things always factor in, but assuming they're good to go, why the heck not? Run it up. Come on.
You know what I'm saying? Call me crazy. Call me crazy here. But run it up, kids.
Run it up. Are you muted? Little technical difficulties here. Heard you for a second there, but then I cannot. One second here. Like we're talking about. Can you hear me, brother? There we go. Cool. Awesome, man. Well, we'll keep it rolling while our esteemed co-host, aka producer, aka the man with the plan, and maybe not only gets his microphone going again, but yeah, like we're talking about, huge shout out to Vinicius, man. Great performance. Bernardo, get the card game up, brother, and we could be talking about you in the winner's column as well. But we could keep it rocking, keep it rolling into this next fight. We have Eric Andrews leading off the prelims, main event on the prelims.
Did you just say Eric Andrews?
Oh, did I say Andrews?
It's your boy, dude. It's your boy, Eric Anders.
Anders. Boy Durs.
Durs, dude.
How can I mess up Durs' name? That is definitely on me, and your audio came back in just in time. Huge shout out, Durs. And it's funny because during the conference, too, I had it written down that I forget the guy
Eric
doing
Andrews.
No, man, I. During the press call, during the announcement of the fighters' names, I don't, for whatever reason, and I don't know if I've ever heard him say this for anyone else, but the guy said, "Your boy, Eric Anders." Oh, yeah, is that his name? Okay.
That's why I said it's your boy.
Your boy.
Yeah, his name it's like Y-E-R, like your boy. Your boy.
Your boy. Okay. So he said it before. I like that. Okay. So I was like, he's just like casually saying, "Your boy,
Eric Anders."
It's your boy, Eric Anders.
it's your boy, dude.
It's your boy. Oh, man. What a performance, man. I mean, he got stung early on there by our boy, Jamie Pickett. Boy, did he. I thought it was going to go downhill from there, but he weathered that storm, man. He channeled a little bit of that inner linebacker days from the Alabama football glory days there. And bit down on that mouthpiece and said, "Yeah, I'm going to war. I'm staying in this pocket, and I'm going to show him how to do a true mixed martial arts fight here. I'm a little bit of this, a little bit of that." And really the difference for me was the wrestling game. I mean, well, let me just start with, he attempted 13 takedowns, ladies and gentlemen, landed 5 of them, had 10 minutes of control time. Really, the reality is Jamie Pickett just did not have an answer. I know. You're telling me 5 for 13. I mean, I think he did think it was a football game out there. He thought he was, like you said, maybe an LSU Tiger or a Clemson or a Clemson Tiger or something, man. This guy out there just tackling everybody. He's a honey badger. He don't care. But yeah, man, here's your thoughts. It's a high quality H2O. But yeah, brother, here's your thoughts, man. If anything else stood out to you, if you expected maybe that kind of performance from our boy Eric Anders. My apologies, man. I'll never get that wrong again, because I love the Workaholics. Quick shout out. But yeah, man, anything else stood out to you in this prelim main event fight?
Man, in this preliminary main event, I thought Eric Anders, your boy, Eric Anders, I thought he was in trouble for a minute there. But I digress. He was able to get the takedowns there early on Jamie Pickett, sap the energy, and thus sap the take, or the, not the takedown, the knockout threat that Jamie Pickett does bring. I feel bad for Jamie Pickett because he did retire after those fights. It was his 5th straight UFC loss. You really, really hate to see that happen to the guy, the Night Wolf, Jamie Pickett. I mean, he is a fun fighter. He just was not done any favors once he made it to the UFC. I mean, he fought Jordan Wright. His first UFC fight, he fought Tafan and Chukwi. Then he fought Jordan Wright, lost both of those. Picked up 2 wins back-to-back after that over Loriano, Stripoli, and Joseph Holmes. And then after that, he racked up 5 back-to-back losses. But because he fought Kyle Daukaus, Dennis Tayulian, Bo Nickel, who you may have heard of, Josh Fremm, and Eric Anders, 5 fairly grapple heavy opponents, and it's known that he is more of a kickboxing style fighter. So I know we're talking mixed martial arts here, and if you want to be competitive, you got to learn all facets of the game. But again, I can call a spade here, and that's a spade, right? Like, they were not doing the guy any favors when it comes to matchmaking. They were pairing him up against very, very tough and not really favorable matchups for the kid, and it shows. So after his 5th straight loss, he did choose to retire. You hate to see it. But talking about the winner, your boy, Eric Anders, I mean, money in the bank, this guy. The takedowns were there all day. He outlanded his opponent almost 4-1 on total strikes. Crazy thing is, on significant strikes, he only outlanded him by 3. But almost 4x when it comes to total strikes. So again, that tells you just how dangerous Jamie Pickett was in that very first round and just on the feet in general. I mean, I really thought that he was going to get him out of there. But Eric Anders weathered the storm early and showed exactly why he's your boy and mine too. So looking forward to that guy's next match. I feel like he is going to do this until the wheels fall off is Eric Anders. He's in the middleweight division, so a lot of opportunity there. Wouldn't mind seeing him match up against somebody like Paul the Bear Jew Craig, or maybe even like a Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez. Why not? Could be a couple of fun matchups there. Do you have any names on the tip of your tongue for him?
No, but those are two great ones. Paul Craig, someone we haven't seen in a long time. Someone that is tricky on the ground. So we'd love to see that puzzle piece match together there. But man, RoboCop, ooh-wee, that is scary business, y'all. That is a fun fight. That is fireworks. And like you said, man, Eric Anders is someone that's been around the division for a long time. Probably at this point deserves a little bit of a nod. He's been a company guy, always says yes. Why not throw him a bone, give him that opportunity or that potential top 15 matchup, let's call it, right? A contender fight there. I love that. I like where you're at, brother. You're hot, man. I have nothing else to say, man. I'm not gonna go off the course. I'm on par with you, brother.
Ready, baby. We're ready. We're fucking fired up, baby. Fired up. I'll tell you something that didn't get me fired up. It was his next match. Gonna go ahead and change the music here.
That was tough. It's a big time. I'll let you lead it because our boy Matt Schnell had a rough outing against Astro Boy.
I'm gonna pour up a shot for this.
I'm right there with you, brother, because you know on this show, nobody drinks alone.
He drinks alone.
So if you're listening and you got something, any hydration.
Whether it's water or something that's not water, do you.
Stay thirsty, my friends. And let us remember the dog of that mess, Chanel. And may his chin rest in peace. And hopefully we never see that goddamn referee again for just the blatant disrespect. Blatant disrespect, bro. Read the fucking room, man. Read the room.
That was not the first mistake Chris Taglioni has made as a referee, and that will be far from the last. I promise you that. He is, lo and behold, my least favorite referee, possibly of all time.
He's now mine as well.
Yamasaki was fun with this, you know? But this guy's just he's a real piece of work, man.
Yeah.
Lower this music a little bit. I am going to keep it going.
But, there we go. But, don't be too much in our feels, but it needs to be there. Presence must be known.
Presence must be known. So I have watched Matt Schnell, Matt Danger Schnell, since the MTV Caged days. Now that's, back before Andrea KGB Lee was a UFC fighter, but you can catch her in the background working the front desk of the gym that Matt Schnell was going to in that very MTV series. It is a very small world and an even smaller state. So when it comes to Matt Danger Schnell, I was obviously extremely stoked to hear that he made it to the UFC years ago. He has had a very up and down run in the UFC since making it there. And on this faithful last weekend, he was paired up against Steve Ursig, who, if you look at him at first glance, looks like a Wish.com British version of Mike from The Office. You've heard of Prison Mike. This is Britain Mike. And I mean, the guy is just an absolute hammer of a man. And we saw it. We saw it happen. It was a disgusting knockout. And the way that Matt Schnell went down, his head bounced off of the mat. Right after he ate I think it was a check left hook that did the stoppage there. Let's see here. Yeah, it was a check left hook. And as soon as he hit, the back of his head bounced off the mat. And of course, the thing we're recalling with the referee is him walking up to Matt Schnell and saying, I don't even know what knocked him out. Was it the crazy hit or was it him hitting his head on the canvas? You'll see it on the replay. Did you see it? Did you hear that sound? To his coach, who was not fucking amused.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, ridiculous.
I mean, read the fucking room, guys.
Yeah, come on. Like, that's what you're going to tell the fighter, one, and his team right after. He just got KO'd. Don't know what was louder. You were hitting the ground. Come on, brother. That's That almost sounds disrespectful. I mean, if anyone were to tell me that in general, I think I'd be like, bro, you're talking shit to me? Fuck you. What do you mean? Yeah, get out of here. I digress. Carry on, brother.
They would find out very, very quickly that Mario and these hands have one thing in common. They are rated E for everyone.
If you thought that was loud, listen, it's
so, yeah, I mean, I digress, folks. It was tough to watch as a Matt Schnell fan. But still, it was a very close fight. 25 to 34 on total strikes landed. 22 to 34 on significant strikes landed. I mean, when Steve was landing, though, he was landing hard. The guy's got dynamite in his hands, and it truly shows. He's got very, very crispy boxing. And I do think that he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the flyweight division. I actually do have two names on the tip of my tongue for him. But before I shout those names out, I'm curious to hear kind of your thoughts overall on this matchup.
Yeah, I think it was a matchup that I was intrigued by going into it. It was something that I was really excited to watch our boy Matt Schnell go up against someone who I really haven't seen a lot of, that in Steve Irsig, right? Astro Boy. I mean, I watched the movie when it came out a long time ago. Haven't seen it since. And I had a similar feeling with our boy Fluffy, if you remember that matchup a few weeks ago, where it's just, you know, we cover this every week. So maybe we're coming at it from a different perspective than most people. But for me, it's just like, I feel like we have not covered him in quite some time. If we actually go back, I'm trying to quickly look at his last fight. It was back in November of 2023. He actually fought three times last year, which, again, just maybe slipped under the radar a little bit. Did not realize how skilled this guy is. Did not realize, like you kindly mentioned there, great breakdown, by the way. Fortunately, obviously, give you your props. I think you poured one out. Let me quickly pour mine as well. But yeah, because the thing with Steve Irsig, man, he looked good. Really clean in the pocket. Really good head movement. So did Matt Schnell. I mean, when they were trading, it was like, okay, we're gonna see a war. What up, Tico Tech? That was a rough one, especially with Tognani being a douche after. Yes. Yes. Couldn't agree more with you. That was where we let off. It's like, come on, brother. In Smokey's voice, he got knocked out. Yeah, basically that's how it felt.
You got knocked the out.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, man. I mean, it was a tough one, but again, like you kindly mentioned, they were trading. Things looked great until it didn't. And I mean, man, just the way he was able to turn over on that hook, I mean, that would put out a lot of people. I think for Matt Schnell, it's at 34 years old, you got to question some things. You got to either really clean up that boxing. Yeah, really clean up that boxing. Otherwise, you know, maybe you reconsider some things, right? I mean, three losses after a no contest at 34 years old. And again, a knockout like that is tough. I mean, it doesn't get easier, right? And I mean, these guys are dogs. They probably will fight, you know, till the limbs fall off. But I would say, I think, really needs to clean up that boxing, because that just was just, you know, keeping the hand down a little bit, staying in the pocket, or just not being able to stay out that center line. It was a tough one, right? I mean, it just, those things happen. But for Matt Schnell, unfortunately, these losses are continuing to add up. And at 34 years old, you're not getting any younger, man. I'd love to see I don't know what your contract situation is like. I'm not saying you should retire, but maybe test the waters in other organizations. Go be a dog. Maybe have a little resurgence, but yeah, these boys are different, man. These boys are different. And Steve Irsig, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, because there are a couple names there, man, in the top 10 now that are sitting pretty, that are interesante, muy interesante. But let's say we do the shot, then we do our potential next fight here. Nice.
Let's get it, baby.
Cheers to Matt Schnell.
To Matt Schnell. And I have my appropriate Louisiana voodoo shot glass
here. I feel like this gave me a deja vu. Did we just do one because of Matt Schnell? Did we do it in the beginning?
We did,
huh? Well, one for the road. It's been a while, y'all.
You thought you saw me pour one up, and you poured one up, so then I couldn't leave it you happens. Hanging, so I poured one up. So
it happens.
It's a vicious cycle, honestly. So yeah, like you said, we do have a couple of names on the tip of our tongue here. I've been steamrolling through these and kind of picking it up with the names. So I'll let you go first on this one, because I feel like you've got a name here. Let's hear it.
Yeah. And I mean, we usually don't do losers, but for Matt Schnell, I mean, hey, anyone underneath him in that top 15, you know, have a crack at it. I mean, he beat one of them, so maybe not that guy. 15, Sumudarji. Anyways,
Sumudarji.
Sumudarji.
That was the first comeback of the year award for the MMA Anomaly Awards.
There we go. I love it. But yeah, for our boy Steve Irsig, aka Astro Boy, I like number 9. I like a little Tim Elliott action, man. I think that's the one name I'm going to go with. I don't know how far you want to launch him and catapult him up the rankings, but that'd be a fun matchup. What are you thinking, brother?
I'm going crazy tonight, bud. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm going crazy tonight.
I like it.
I'm saying Mateos Nicolau. I don't dislike that fight like at all. I don't know. I just feel like that's a really, really fun matchup for him.
I like it.
He's also coming off of a loss to Brandon Raw Dog Royval.
It's a really good challenge.
His last win was over Matt Schnell back in 2022.
Ooh, well, there you go. There's a narrative.
I mean, like, it's just like trajectory wise, like the stars align. And then as far as like you saying Sumudarji for Matt Schnell, part of me wants to slap you across the face. Like, don't put that evil on him again. He already weathered that storm and somehow pulled it off. Like, I don't need to see that. But somehow I'm going to be even meaner. I'm going to do something worse. I'm going to say Tatsuro Taira versus Matt Schnell.
You're really trying to put the nail in the coffin, aren't you?
But I also want Matt Schnell to go to, like, American Top Team with his boy Dustin Poirier. Get that work in.
Boy, I don't know. If anyone gonna get ready for Tatsuro, though.
On his head movement. Like, okay. Going to go a little bit too technical here. Just because I really, really like Matt Schnell. I'll do a much like further in-depth breakdown probably when we do the Dustin Poirier talk in 2 days. But one of the things that drives me nuts about Matt Schnell is he's a really, really gifted fighter in so, so many ways. But once he starts getting clipped, he has a tendency to, and again, like, his head movement stays consistent when he's just at range. Like, he does his checks, right? Like, a lot of people have a different rhythm that they'll do. Some people go like forward, left, back, right. Some people go left, right, forward, back, left, forward, right, left, back, right, forward. You know what I mean? Like, so there's all these different like patterns that you teach yourself, and his typically is very similar, right? And he does it when he's at range. But the second he jumps in and lands a strike, his head stays front and center. So when he's at range, he's, and then he goes tat tat, and then his head just fucking stays there. And that's exactly what happened. His head, he jumped forward, went to land something, and then his head just stayed on the center line, and boom. Left hook Larry said, good night, son. Let me tuck you in for bedtime story. And I mean, it sucks. So I feel like those types of tendencies. What up, Leo Leach? Welcome to the chat, my guy. Happy to see you. Always a pleasure.
What up?
So when you do these things, especially as a professional fighter, right? It's one thing when you're on the regional scene and you're doing this on kind of a lower end and an amateur scene, right? Or even like when you just started going pro, he's done this for some time. And the only time you see somebody that has done this professionally for some time make these types of moves inside of the octagon on a professional level is another example of this is when Luke Rockhold left American Kickboxing Academy and went down to Florida, down to Boca Raton, and was training at Sanford. He was training with Henry Hooft and the boys. They're definitely not those killers from Dagestan. And they're also not used to his tricks that he no longer was able to get away with at AKA because everybody knew his tricks. So you start using these things that people that always see you on TV, right? So people that are training to fight you are not going to fall for. Now they're working on these guys that maybe are less than or are not used to you. So I think a similar thing is what we're seeing happen to Matt Schnell, right? Where he's able to get away with certain things. And I don't want to say lazy tendencies, but tendencies all the less or nonetheless, he's able to get away with them while training in Louisiana at his gym. And it's not great for him, right? Because then you go inside the octagon and it just doesn't really work out really well for you. Because what happens is you fall prey to your own mistakes, to your own bad habits. So I'd like to see him go to American Top Team down in Florida. I think Fortis MMA is very fun. It's a very good gym, but obviously the things that he's doing there are not paying off at this point in time in his career. So it might be time to move on. Maybe he's plateaued there. And that's not a knock on Fortis. I think the Fortis is very, very good. I just maybe think that he needs to get that work in with some other flyweights. Maybe even go to fucking Sacramento, man.
Yeah.
See Uriah Faber.
Alpha Male. Yeah, Alpha Male and the boys. It's a good crew they got over there, man. And sometimes, like you said, man, a good change of scenery can go a long way. 100%. Absolutely. Can never teach an old dog. Never too late to teach an old dog new tricks, right? That's what they say. Come on. You got this now. You got that dog in you, brother.
That's stay a fact, on it, man. Baby. Stay on it. Stay on it. Stay on it. And now with that, we are going to change back to some happier music here.
Let's go. Bring the vibes back.
And we are going to go ahead and jump right on into the next fight. We had Umer Nurmagomedov coming into this mug. Man, oh man. What a fighter Umer is. And honestly, like, what a brave guy taking a fight against kind of an unknown fighter that was fairly unbeaten and had a lot of ways, a lot of paths to victory. Again, I'll let you take the lead on this one because I definitely took the lead on that last one, my guy. Let's hear it.
I appreciate it, brother. Maybe it's because I was already unmuted. You knew I was eager to talk about a Nurmagomedov, an undefeated Nurmagomedov, that is. Umar coming in here undefeated, man. And like I said, what a performance, right? And I think one thing we do need to make sure that we stand clear, or not stand clear, but we need to make crystal clear here, is that he did get hurt in this fight, y'all. He had to weather a little bit of a storm. There were some showers in paradise, man. Begzak Al-Makan, my goodness, he was rocking and rolling. I mean, only threw 25 punches, landed 5 of them. But one of those 5, man, put Umar down. Maybe temporarily, maybe it was a little bit of a slip. But Umar definitely was hurt a little bit, and he did have to stay focused, take him down, and do what he does best. And that was score 5 out of 5 takedowns, have 11 minutes of control time out of 15 minutes, y'all. That is a lot. Still found a way to land 68 strikes, significant strikes, I should say. My goodness, I didn't even get to the top line here. Total strikes, 145 out of 197, y'all. Woo-wee! Close to 75% landing strike. That's quick math for you. Correct me if I'm wrong, but close to that. Again, he's a savage, man. But my question is, can he weather the storm of a legitimate striker? I think after seeing this kind of matchup, it makes me want to see him fight Corey Sandhagen even more. Umer, what is the channel? Umar Nurmagomedov. My apologies. We got the beards too. We got to be more respectful. That's on me. Don't cancel me, y'all. But no, Umar Nurmagomedov, absolute dog. Someone that is a force to be reckoned with here in the bantamweight division. But again, I want to see him fight Corey Sandhagen. I want to see him fight a striker. I want to see him fight Merab. I want to see him fight a dude. I need to see that challenge now. He's obviously ready. We've all known it. But this guy, Begzog's not it, right? I mean, we need to see him go up and fight an absolute savage. So I'm excited for what's next, whether it's Corey, whether it's, I don't even know, Henry, whether it's Merab. Give me someone that can also wrestle a little bit, but can also put the hands on him. And hey, man, Umar needs, I need to see it. I'm not going to say too much more, but again, because I love Corey Sandhagen. So if they were to fight, I'm still confident. And after that performance, I'm even more leaning Corey, is what I'm trying to say here. Like, it's like, I understand the wrestling is crazy, but
Brother, wrestling, you know this.
Brother. It's next level. I know this,
brother.
I know this, man. I know this. You're right about it.
You know this, brother.
Umar Nurmagomedov came out there and just put the hurting on Begzak Al-Makan. Oh, man, I mean, 145-5. And yet still there are people in the chat right now saying that they are disappointed. It's like when they were like, I mean, all he did was jab Ally Quinta. Why didn't he go out there and beat his ass? I mean, he did beat his ass. He landed 132 motherfucking jabs, dog. I would call that a fucking firm ass whooping. You know what I'm saying? I would say that he went out there and was the fucking matador to the bull. You know what I'm saying? But I digress. I feel like that's what happened this weekend. There were a total of 3 significant strikes landed from Behzad Almakhan, and that's all anybody's talking about. He landed on Umar. Oh my gosh, he hurt him. He's Umar's gonna lose for sure. He's gonna lose soon, dude. I knew it. That's all anybody's talking about on MMA Twitter. I mean, 80% of MMA Twitter is like 13 years old, so that's fine. Not that I'm mad about it. They just like haven't been watching for a long time, so like they don't know any better. It's fine.
They don't know this brother. They don't know this brother, Sambo brother. It's win. It's going to win, brother.
So Umar is just an absolute stud. 17-0 he improves to in this fight. And I still think the future is pretty damn bright for Behzad Almakhan. Now, I'm going to throw out a little bit of a curveball here. I know that you're saying, all right, I really want to see him fight a big name, a real name. I want to see him fight Corey the Sandman Sanhagen. You're wrong. Not going to happen. I will tell you who he's going to fight, though. He's going to fight Vinicius Oliveira because they've been beefing online. And that fight doesn't make sense from a ranking standpoint. And it's going to happen. And then after that, they're going to give him a title shot. It doesn't make sense, but that's how this game works.
It happens. It happens. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Watch. Mark my words. I'm going to put a double shot on it that Umar never fights Corey Sandhagen and gets the belt.
Woo. That is...
It's a double whammy, but it's true.
I don't know if I like it. I don't know if I put a bounce.
It's funny because it's true, dude.
No, he has all the tools, man. He has all the tools. It does. I mean, I do want to see him. I mean, it's the striking piece. You want to see him go into a war, right? You want to see him come out the other side victorious against a dog. It doesn't make any sense, so we're going to book it ASAP. This era of combat sports in a nutshell. LOL. Back, you're right, baby. Dude. You're onto something there, brother.
That's how we do. That's how we make matches. That's how we match make.
I mean, the matches are making money. I guess that's how they're looking at it.
Call that that's why we're getting... Mikano, because it's making money.
Money.
Money Mikano, dude. All right, man. So Umar Nurmagomedov. Obviously, what's next for him should be the Sandman Corey Sandhagen. But it's tough, man. He's probably going to end up fighting Vinicius Oliveira. And I completely agree with you, Leo Leach, here. Leo, I want you to screen record this, okay? Get ready. Get your phone ready, bud. I seriously want you to screen record this because I know that you're not going to believe that this came out of my mouth since I'm a big AKA guy, big true believer, trained there. Big Nurmagomedov guy in general. I think, truthfully, like all like taking the piss, as you guys say, aside and bullshit aside, I think Umar Nurmagomedov will end up getting a loss before he actually becomes championship caliber or champion caliber for that matter. And I do think that the type of person that can handle that loss is Corey Sandhagen. I think Corey Sandhagen is arguably one of the best bantamweights that is currently active in the UFC. And I do think that at this point in their careers, he is better than Umar Nurmagomedov.
I agree. I think I agree. So you think he's on a 2-year plan then? That being Umar, maybe a 2-3-year plan away from being right where he needs to be?
I think he's on a 1-year, maybe 2-year max, not 3 years. I think if he fights Sandhagen next, he loses that fight and comes back scary as fuck, like Khabib scary. And I mean, realistically, like I think if he avoids Corey, he might end up just working his way to the top and getting the belt off of getting like two other random wins over people that maybe shouldn't get him to the top. But it will anyways, because it doesn't make any sense. So we're going to book it ASAP. As Tico Tech LLC so nicely and eloquently put in the chat.
Modern era UFC.
Modern era UFC. Speaking of modern era UFC, we're going to jump right into this next one. Now, Leo Leach in the chat here, in the live chat, said that the Umar Nurmagomedov fight disappointed him a little bit. Me, not so much. This next one, though, it did. Alex Perez coming in against Muhammad Makhachev. I expected more from Makhachev. I expected a finish. And I also expected him to go more than 15% on his takedowns. He went 3 for 20, which even attempting 20 takedowns is fucking impressive as all get out. Like, don't get me wrong, but you're that guy, or at least you're claiming to be, right? So you gotta put it on him. You gotta be at that caliber. And boy, oh boy, you gotta look stunning while you're doing it. And to me, it looked pretty competitive. It didn't look that stunning. So curious to hear your thoughts. Did he gain stock for you as a fan, or did he lose stock for you as a fan?
I would say he gained a little bit, but it was a marginal victory. To your point, man, I think if you really want to go and make your case as the next contender, as a guy that deserves that next title shot, it is open for the taking right now, that being the division. But to your point, man, to answer your question directly, it just felt like, yeah, I would have liked to see a little bit more, maybe just a little bit more aggression. Maybe we're discounting the fact that Alex Perez is an absolute doll. Like, he does have a really good wrestling background. He was a wrestling coach back at high school in his hometown of Samore, California. So maybe just some of that background frustrated or did not allow Muhammad Makhachev to just be as dominant in that realm. But yeah, I mean, to your point, to be that consistent is like a Merab level type pace. So you got to appreciate that. And I do want to say as well, some of the striking was impressive. When they were on their feet, there were some good exchanges. He was throwing some good combinations. But I think it just, I don't know. To me, I just felt like I would want to see a little bit more, right? I think it left a little bit to be desired. Maybe because he didn't get the finish, right, where there's not that exclamation point. But he got the win. It was obvious. Like, he decisively won over 15 minutes against an Alex Perez who's been there for a long time. Is this the best version of Alex Perez? No. You know, this is, you know, not 2015. So maybe that's where I guess I'm a little more hesitant, in that I would have loved to see this against maybe another guy. Maybe, you know, again, just looking at the landscape here, he's number 7. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the reality is, he's making it look easy, and there's not a lot of names in front of him anymore. You know, I mean, Alex Perez was ranked 7th. Now Muhammad is, right? So he's making it look somewhat easy for himself. It's not the most exciting fight. I mean, his style doesn't lead to be that way, right? If you're shooting for a bunch of takedowns, you're not the most prolific striker. And what I mean by that is, you're not the most exciting. You're not throwing these extravagant punches. You're not a Michael Venom Page. You a little more meats and potatoes with a just dominant wrestling background. Yeah, again, all long-winded way of me saying he did win me over, but it's a little bit. And again, he can't really go much higher, though. I guess that's the reality. He's undefeated. He's ranked high. I guess I just am not a huge fan, if I'm just being honest, man. Again, that's more of a me thing than anything. But curious to hear your thoughts. Anything else that stood out to you in regards to Muhammad's performance here, or what's next, or if he's deserving of a title shot?
I definitely wouldn't say he's deserving of a title shot. If I'm being honest, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's close to him being deserving of a title shot. I mean, come on. Like, let's just face it here. The guy is an absolute beast of a human being. He's a beast of a fighter. And he's also incredibly young. I mean, the kid was born in the year 2000. He's barely 23 years of age. So, I mean, the kid is genuinely a child. I don't think it's time for a title shot. I think he needs to kind of slow his roll to an extent, right? But he is right up there. He's definitely right the fuck up there. He's another guy that I wouldn't mind seeing fight Steve Ursic. If he's not mad at fighting down a few slots. And Steve Ursic has more than earned his shot here. I think he probably knocks him out. I mean, it's just a question of can Makhachev get him down quick enough to establish that dominant control time and sap the knockout ability of him. Otherwise, Muhammad Makhachev versus Manel Kopp is probably a really compelling matchup, in my opinion. And I think the winner of that could be teed up for a title shot. Manel Kopp's been chomping at the bit for a title shot. So has Makhachev. So I think that's a really fun one. Moving into the co-main event of the evening, we had Vitor Petrino coming in against Tyson Pedro. Oh, man. We'll probably end up pouring a shot out after we do this breakdown. But I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, Nano, because I blew steam on the last one. Let's hear it, brother. What were your thoughts on Tyson Pedro's final performance in the Octagon?
The final one, man, and it kind of looked like it, didn't it? It did feel like he was a little disengaged. It felt like he was getting frustrated, just was not able to do what he would normally like to do with his opponents. But there's a reason for that, right? And it's because he was standing in front of a dog in the light heavyweight division, a new guy that we need to be talking about here, y'all, in Vitor Petrino. Dude is absolutely stacked, built like a UFC character you'd make on the video game. Huge, you know, arms, legs, back, everything, man. Dude's a gigantic human being, and he uses his size well. He's extremely well-rounded. He does not make a lot of mistakes. He feints when he needs to. He moves forward when he needs to. And man, when he starts letting him fly, you can tell the damage it inflicts on his opponents. And Tyson Pedro really did not want a lot to do with that. The reality was, yeah, Vitor was just leading the dance. It was close, right? I mean, both guys were not necessarily blitzing a ton. It was a more calculated, measured fight. And sometimes that's what happens here. When both guys have that knockout capability, once you get out of like the lightweight division and you're in the middleweight, light heavyweight, like these big boys, it only takes one a lot of the time. So sometimes they are a little more measured. It is less offensive. It's more of again, just measured approach. I want to keep reiterating that because, you know, they both landed 33 strikes. They both individually landed 33 strikes. Thank you, brother. I wanted to say total, but then I'm like, I'm going to throw it off. No. They each had 33. So with that in mind, again, like not a lot of offense through 15 minutes. Kind of hard for the judges to maybe look at that. But again, the difference here for Vitor was the takedowns. Landing 3 out of 5, being able to control Tyson for 5 minutes there. And again, and it all showed their trajectories, right? Where Vito's going. Vitor is in a position now. Let me quickly pull up his age. Vitor Petrino is 26 years young, y'all. And with that kind of performance, with these kind of guys that he's now beating, I mean, that is, sky's the limit for this kid. Thinking he's to continue to put it together. He's to continue to develop his boxing. But man, he's really freaking good. But again, you know, for Tyson Pedro, quickly want to obviously pour out our shots. At 32 years old, that's young, right? I mean, that you typically don't see that. But the reality is he only had 11 fights under his belt, or 12, I believe. And there's a reason for that, and it's because of injuries. Okay, it was because of injuries. It's because of him wanting to spend time with his family, with his daughter. And that's tough, right? So you see that some of the best football players, sometimes they're the ones that go out early because of those injuries, just not able to stay healthy. That's part of the game, y'all. And so for that, get healthy, do what you got to do. And hey, cheers to your next endeavor. I think maybe that's a better way to look at it. Anything else you got to say there, brother?
Oh, man. I mean, cheers to retirement. Hopefully it's the best chapter of your life. And I mean, no fault to you for wanting to take time away for you and your family. And also, I mean, on this, cheers. I agree with Tico Tech LLC here in the chat. I hope it is a real retirement. I hope he has a fallback career planned or something to the extent. And, you know, I just want to see him do well in his next installment of life. So,
and being a dad. So there you go. Cheers to that. Dad.
Cheers to that, man. You got a reason, brother. So cheers.
Yeah. It seems like a good bloke. Seems like a dude you want to root for. At a minimum, get a pint with or two. So, oh, if I'm ever in Australia, actually, my buddy's out there right now. Be cool if they run into someone out there in that, you know, part of the world. But,
well, I'll tell you this: me and Mayor definitely have Australia and New Zealand on our list of places to go.
Yeah.
We were planning on going there. Possibly this year or next year, but then we got the impromptu trip that we're going to take to the Cayman Islands. So that's obviously going to be our one new country to check off, or one new destination to check off this year. And then we also have a couple of other destinations you already know. But yeah, man, if you're planning on going to Australia, or you and Amy want to do like a little dilly deal.
You know, might have to, man. I mean, a lot of the world to see for sure.
All dated out there.
Absolutely, yeah. Maybe, I mean, I'll never say never, I'll tell you that much, because there's a lot of the world we want to see, so I'm down.
One place that I definitely think that we should, like, double date trip to, mm-hmm. and obviously, like, we don't have to do everything together. Like, we'll go together, we'll plan some things together, we'll split off into our own shit, but I think mm-hmm. Thailand would be a good fucking time together.
Dude, yeah. Amy's been before, so she can definitely give us a little bit more of a rundown. I'd be down. She's
I mean, as long as we go to the place, the bar where you and your homie can sign up to fight each other for a couple rounds. you and me are gonna do a couple shots. We're gonna get in there, and
then we'll get to them. We'll take some shots.
We're gonna take some shots.
As long as you don't scramble my huevos, everything we're good,
brother. The ones up here, but just very slightly. We're keeping exactly. it light. We're keeping it light. We're keeping it of tight. Course. You know, we're gonna have form in there.
No, but we get some honest work going.
I just think that would be fucking a.
Oh, that's epic.
Extremely good time.
Fucking B, yes.
Epic, as you just said. And C, I mean, come on, bro. Like, could you imagine us just getting both our girls to record different camera angles of that? And then stringing it up to some brother.
Yeah, I mean, in Thailand, like when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Yeah, I mean, when in Thailand, you got to get some Muay Thai training in. So best believe, brother, we would be doing that.
And I've already told Mary, like, I will do like a at least drop in class at the very least at Tiger's Muay Thai. Like just drop in. Get some sweat on, possibly break a rib or two of my own, like not anybody else.
not looking to break ribs.
Not looking to break ribs. I'm going to get my own broken. Like, make no mistake. I know how this is going to play out. But yeah, I just think that'd be a really good time.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Speaking of good times. Oh boy. Speaking of good times.
Good times.
This main event was probably not really one of them.
Not a good time.
You know what? I'm going to let you lead in on this one and just hot mic. What, like when you were watching this fight, I want you to try and accurately describe what your emotions were. Like what did this fight make you feel?
A little frustration to a point of a comedic relief. I would put it that way. Because it was just like, okay, like, what do we got? And then after a while, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is it. This is what we got. This is just, you know, Jairinho, or is that how you pronounce it? Jairinho?
Jairzinho.
Jairzinho. I forgot the Z, my apologies. Jairzinho.
I was like, is he talking about Gilbert Burns, man? Dorino?
I know how. Maybe that's where my brain's at.
I was like, that's in 2 days.
Whoops. Slow down. Slow your roll, brother.
I don't know if you saw me like, what?
I know. It felt like it, too. I'm like, yeah, you did it right. Like, even the way I said it. Yeah, man. The way he came out there, it was to be expected. He was measured. He was moving a little bit. but just sticking our boy with the jab there, man. Sticking Shamil with the jab. And I was surprised to see that he was the underdog. In my opinion, going into it, I'm expecting Shamil to be a dude, right? I mean, he's big. He looks mean. And if he's the Ben favorite, I'm like, what do I not know about this guy? I've never really seen him, never really heard about him. Must be a guy. But just another dude. Honestly, it ended up the joke I was trying to make was like, he just looks like Frankenstein. It's just sitting there, kept his mouthpiece is hanging out. It's red. His mouth's red. It's bloody. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. He's just getting peppered with that jab. And then he finally tells his corner that he can't see. Spoiler alert. So everything about that was weird. Mark Goddard. And I don't know if the coach, because when I noticed it, when the translator was in the corner, you heard him translate something like, oh, you can't fight with one eye. And then I was kind of like, oh, that's weird. And then DC kindly is mentioning, oh, there's some commotion in the corner. Something's going on. And then Mark Goddard, almost in a frustrated way, is like, you guys get out. What did he tell you? What did the fighter tell you? And he's like, oh, well, he said he had something in his eye. And then it's like, okay. Doctor comes in. He's asked, he's like, what's he saying? He's like, oh, he's saying he can't see. I've seen enough. It's over, right? So there's some little controversy. But that was the most exciting part of the fight. And it was the end of it. But no, I mean, all things considered, yeah, not a lot of strikes. It felt like if you were watching UFC 5 and it was maybe your two nieces and nephews playing it, just hitting A over and over again, just jabbing one out. That was basically how I felt watching. I got a good crack out of all of it, which I appreciate. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, man. It was a sit out to you or just your commentary on that main event.
I'm literally cracking the fuck up right now, bro. Like, that shit's hella funny.
Just give them the sticks and you sit. Another guy.
Are you only hitting the fucking like X button? What are you doing? Yes.
I like the circle one because it's pink. It's
like, all right. So Tico Tech LLC in the chat. Goddard handled that. The real no nonsense. You know, I think the only difference between him and Keith Peterson is he doesn't smell like booze and cigarettes. You know what I'm saying? Bad jokes all day here on the MMA Anomaly Show. So this definitely, I'll be honest, like while I was watching it, it definitely felt like if I had to sum up my internal being in one sound, it would literally be. Because, you know, it's a heavyweight fight and I'm really expecting it to deliver. I'm expecting something to happen here. But instead, we got, you know, a little, not a lot of that. So it felt like there was not a lot of strikes landing, as the co-host with the most Nano pointed out. But I digress. Jairzinho Rozenstruik landed 140 strikes. 127 of which were considered significant strikes. Oh, and by the way, he threw 230 strikes. Yeah, 230 strikes. So, I mean, there were strikes thrown. It just didn't really seem like it. Right?
Maybe I got lulled into it. Maybe it was like a lullaby because it was just the same strike over and over again. I think over 25 minutes, I didn't realize, oh, yeah, that happened like 100 times. That's fair. That's probably what happened. I think I just got like lulled into it.
I, too, can press the A button, Tico Tech LLC said. And I mean, that's exactly it. Like, all he did was press the A button the entire fight. That being said, doesn't matter whether you push the A button, the X button, you know, the B button or the Y button, doesn't matter. Okay. If I land my A button five times as many times as you land your whatever buttons, I mean, you're going to be looking at the second half of your paycheck or looking for it like, where are you? And I'm so sorry. I had to win by pushing A tonight. I only jabbed always. No, but seriously, it was a sad fight. When you get a heavyweight main event, as Blink-182 said appropriately, it's like a sick, strange darkness. Because it's just sad, you know? It's always going to be sad. And that it was. There was a guy that was shouted out on the MMA Hour this week, though, that won, or rather, this week, that won a boatload of money because he bet $50 that Jarzinho Rozenstruik would get a knockout in round four. And since the fight technically did not start round five, it cashed. You imagine watching that fight and just being like,
what?
Like looking what everywhere for an exciting main event. Like, where are you? And then all of a sudden, homie doesn't make it off the stool for the fucking fifth round. And then you just look at your checkbook. Like, suddenly that main event is not so trash. So, at least some people had to have enjoyed it. And the rest of the card, as you said appropriately, was sneaky good. There were some sleepers on this card. There were some bangers on this card. And then there were, you know, main events like this that made you kind of want to go to sleep. Not going to say I didn't fall asleep during that main card. I would be fucking just gobbling up lies if I said I didn't. I did go back and rewatch it, though, and that's all that matters, folks, because, you know, we're a real serious podcast here. Moving into the next one. Just kidding. That was it. That was the main event of the evening. That was the main event of the evening. Though it was not the most exciting main event of the evening, we still are going to play matchmaker here. It was a heavyweight, low-key, not so much of a banger. That being said, Jarzinho Rozenstruik still outlanded his opponent 5-1. On both total strikes and significant strikes, and he negated 6 out of 7 takedowns that Shamil Gaziev threw. Do you have a name on the tip of your tongue for who should be next for Jarzinho Rozenstruik?
Man, I'm quickly looking at the landscape, and you know what's funny about this is how you know the UFC was not happy with his performance, is although they moved him up a ranking, he is still tied 11th with Derek Lewis. So they couldn't even give him the 10 or the 11 solely. It's like, you're going to share that with Derek. You're both 11. You're not solely 11. That's hilarious. Just a little UFC's subtle way of saying, I don't even want to have you here, but I suppose you're the same as Derek. But I do like Marcos Rogério de Lima, right? I mean, someone that just fought recently, beat one of the Taffa brothers. Unless he's going to go beat the other Taffa brother, which, I mean, let's give their mom and dad a break, maybe. And maybe throw him in there against, you know, our boy who did get a win here, technically. Rozenstruik against Marcos Rogério de Lima. Not a bad one to me. You got anyone top of mind?
I'm not mad at that. Of course I have someone top of mind. I always do. I'm not mad at that at all. Give him his round of applause, folks. He did a great job there. I mean, Marcos Rogério de Lima, definitely not a bad decision. But, I mean, he just got a win. I don't want to make him fight backwards. I'd rather him fight upwards. Instead, I'd rather him stand across the octagon and be like,
I heard you got a takedown game. I all of a sudden have a takedown defense game.
I'm talking about Sergey the Polar Bear Spivak. All right. I think that that's a really, really fun fight. And I also just am curious if he would be able to negate the takedown that the Polar Bear presents. I personally think that the Polar Bear would be able to take him down and control him. And I mean, Jarzinho Rozenstruik is a scary individual, if for no other reason, because of his knockout power that he presents. And call me crazy, I'm going to throw just a little bit of a bit of a conspiracy theory out here. So I think because he has so much power, that's the reason he was able to dictate the fight so much with just simply using a jab. Because that jab, even though it might not be the most powerful weapon in the world, when Jarzinho throws it, it is extremely strong. And also, even just the threat of a jab and feeling that push you back, lets you know, wow, if this guy throws a cross or a hook or an uppercut, I'm in danger. And you also saw him split a man's fucking lip. Just split. It looked like, again, something out of a movie. So that threat of power is just a terrifying thing. Does that threat of power slow somebody like Sergey Spivak from coming in the way that he does? I don't want to say with reckless abandon, but with the utmost bravery. Like, the way that he comes in for takedowns is like, it's kind of haphazard. I mean, it's very technical. That's why I don't want to use the term haphazard, because haphazard gives way to like, oh, he's not really caring what he's doing. He's just rushing into it. And that's not how Spivak does it. But at the same time, he does it with a kind of wherewithal and knowing like, I'm probably going to get hit. Like, I'm probably going to eat a hook or an uppercut coming in for this. But as long as I get a clasped hand or a gable grip, like around his leg, even just one leg, I can take him for a ride, and there I can win the fight. And if that's the case, let me tell you, brother, I think it could be a really, really fun fireworks match up there. What are your thoughts on that one, man?
I love it, brother. I love where your head's at. I mean, I do think for someone like Rozenstruik, who's been around the heavyweight division for a long time, yeah, to your point, reward him, right? I'm being a little facetious. I'm being a little bit negative, a little pessimistic and saying, hey, you know, go down. But to your point, I think if I were to choose someone above his ranking, I was liking that Sergey Spivak, man. Right on the money. Come out. Oh, thank you, Tico Tech. Great pick, Nano. Thank you, good sir.
Yeah, I wanted to give you your flowers. Tico Tech LLC was definitely loving your pick. So, I mean,
he's got great taste.
I mean, he has handsome. Great taste. Must be handsome. He is a handsome guy. He is a handsome guy. I've been told that we look like brothers. I also think that my fiance is racist. So she probably thinks all those white guys look the same. No, I kid. But she has said that about me and Tico Tech LLC.
A little similar.
I mean, there's definitely some similarities there, brother. That being said, that's it for UFC Vegas, UFC Fight Night Vegas 87. Goodness gracious me, there's so many of these fight nights nowadays. We didn't actually end up doing a pick for Vitor Petrino for his next fight, did we?
No, we didn't. Now I'm thinking about it. And, you know, I guess.
Do you have someone on the tip of your tongue? Sorry if I cut you off on that.
No, I don't, to be honest. It's tough, right? I guess the question is always, are they ready for a top 15 guy or not? I'll quickly pull up the rankings, but dude, he's so talented. I would love to see it. He is still young.
He's 15 now.
Oh, is he?
He broke into the rankings today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he did. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Damn. He broke into the rankings today. I had a name on the tip of my tongue. It slipped my mind. I forgot to say it.
Dude, anyone. I'd love to see him fight anyone. Anybody, right? I mean, go down the list. I mean, Dominic Gray is not that excited, but I'd see it. Alonzo Menafield.
That's the one that I had originally on my name or on the tip of my tongue was Dominic Reyes. He's on a 4-fight skid. He's not in a place to say no to many people. I don't want to see it for him because I'm a Dominic Reyes fan. I thought he won that fight against John Jones. I'll take it to my grave.
I know. I know.
You know what I'm saying? But I digress. It's time, right? Like, it's time for Vitor Petrino. And I think Dominic Reyes
versus good for the division.
Petrino would be really good for the division. And if he says no, I also think Alonzo Menafield would be a good fight for him. Petrino versus Alonzo Menafield.
I like that. And what's funny you say that was I was going to mention that as well and say, if you want to just book the two buffest dudes in the division, that's what you do right there. You book that one. Woo-wee! That is a muscle daddy matchup right there.
Overhead City.
Oh, let's go.
Alonzo just like lugging forward.
Both of those men. Every time they throw, the ground would shake a little bit. Time would stop for a second.
I swear. So yeah, make sure you tune in on Thursday where we will be breaking down UFC 299 as well as a little bit of boxing talk. You already know. We got Francis Ngannou coming in against Anthony Joshua, folks. one of the coolest promo packs I've ever seen in my entire fucking life, if I'm being honest here. So super duper, super duper, super duper stoked about all of the fights coming up this weekend. It is a Chito Vera fight week. And it is also a Dustin Poirier fight week, folks. So we're excited about it. Can't wait to break down these fights. We are going to be putting a little bit of money down on these fights here. Going to be putting down a couple of units here. We're going to be gobbling it up. And you already know we're going to be fucking taking it all the way to the bank. So if you are new here, if you are returning, anywhere in between, you know the drill. You know the deal. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, smash that bell for notifications. And as we like to say here on the show, keep on going, keep on growing. And till then, see you next time, folks.
You've been listening to the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. As you may have been able to tell, we dig the MMA, and our passion is to dive deep into the upcoming fights, give you our expert breakdowns, and help you make sense of all the chaos that is the fight game. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, make sure to find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch at MMAnomaly. Be cool, and we'll see you next time.